Today is January 1st, 2019, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Jim Bertel in Washington. Happy New Year. Coming up, we're learning more about the American detained by Russia on espionage charges. 2018 saw films with African-American stars score big at the box office.
African-American audiences, there's a lot to pull from. And hopefully there's some inspiration, again, about learning about the roots of where African-Americans came from.
And we'll learn about therapy for injured musicians. It's all on today's International Edition. Paul Whelan, the American citizen detained in Moscow on Friday on espionage charges, has been identified as a retired U.S. Marine. Whelan's family posted messages on social media Tuesday saying they first grew concerned when he did not contact them on Friday. The family learned of his arrest only after it was reported by Russian state news outlets. Joining us with more on the story is VOA's Moscow correspondent Pete Kobus. Pete, what do we know about Paul Whelan?
So far, we know only that he's a retired U.S. Marine who was here on pleasure. He'd made several trips to Russia since 2007, but this was the first one he'd made for personal reasons, as he was attending the wedding of a fellow former U.S. Marine who's marrying a Russian woman. And beyond that, we don't know much.
How about the U.S. State Department? And when people are arrested in a foreign country, it is often it is the norm for the embassy to be able to reach out to the person that has been arrested. Has that happened yet?
That hasn't happened, and that's actually a sort of point of tension here with the Paul Whelan story, is that even though Russia had detained him on December 28th, normally if they detain an American, they notify the embassy, and the embassy immediately has 72 hours to respond. In this case, Russia detained Paul Whelan, and then they didn't say anything for 2 days, and they allowed it to trickle out through Russian state media, and the announcement went public on the evening of New Year's Eve, when probably embassies all over the world are completely empty. And so it really appears that maybe it's a real possibility that they timed it such that the U.S. Embassy would not have the ability to access Paul Whelan. It looks like that may be the case.
Oh, that would be an interesting development. Now, this arrest coincides with several current spy scandals between the U.S. and Russia. Is this a possible setup for a spy swap?
I've seen a lot of speculation about that perhaps Paul Whelan had been detained on charges of being a U.S. asset or a spy to set him up as a sort of convenient swap or to trade for Maria Butina, who's currently in U.S. detention, who's facing spy charges as well. But that's just very difficult to speculate. Both countries are holding numerous detainees in their prison systems for a variety of convictions over the past decade or two. And so why they would need to grab this individual at this moment in time just to trade her for Butina, I think that's still a difficult case to make.
Okay, just one last question. This arrest, do you think it'll have an impact on U.S.-Russia relations?
That is really the million-dollar question. I know that on December 28th or so, Vladimir Putin sent out a number of New Year's greetings to various world leaders. In his greeting to President Donald Trump, he called for a renewal of wide-ranging talks on any number of issues with the United States, and that he still considers the United States a vital partner in, you know, fighting terrorism globally and whatnot. And so it seems like now the ball is really in Donald Trump's court, but tensions are really at a low point, and it's just really difficult to say at this point if relations can improve anytime soon.
VOA Moscow correspondent Pete Kobus, thanks for joining us today. Among the top stories in the world, the partial U.S. government shutdown is in its 11th day as the border wall dispute lingers. Ukrainian officials are warning that Russia may be about to escalate its conflict with Ukraine. Afghan forces repulse a Taliban attack on oil fields but lose 20 soldiers in the process. North Korean leader Kim Jong-un says he is beginning the new year with hopes of more nuclear talks with U.S. President Donald Trump. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the voanews.com website and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition.
This is Science in a Minute.
It is expected that one day in the future, people will touch down and walk on Mars. There are also those such as Elon Musk of SpaceX who are working on ways to build and maintain human colonies on the Red Planet. But there are a number of challenges that block the pathway for human exploration of our planetary neighbor. A group of experts recently met in London to discuss the social and psychological aspects of traveling to and living on Mars. According to the meeting's lead organizer, Federico Caprotti of the University of Exeter, the biggest hurdles to Mars settlement are not technical but psychological. Those attending the meeting discussed such issues as humans developing interplanetary jet lag, the lack of the ability to be able to communicate in real time with Earth, and, of course, the inevitable personality clashes between members of the colony. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Thanks for joining me today for International Edition. I'm Jim Bertel. British police say the stabbing of three people on New Year's Eve in Manchester might have been an act of terrorism. Chief Constable Ian Hopkins.
We are treating this as a terrorist investigation, which is being led by counter-terrorism officers with support from Greater Manchester Police. They were working throughout the night to piece together the details of what happened.
Two people were badly injured in the attack.
Last night we experienced a horrific attack on people simply out to enjoy the New Year's Eve celebrations in Manchester. My thoughts are very much with the couple who are still being treated in hospital for their very serious injuries. And of course with the brave British Transport Police officer that was stabbed during the attack.
A suspect has been detained on suspicion of attempted murder. The attack took place near Manchester Arena, where a suicide bomber killed 22 people at an Ariana Grande concert in 2017.
I know that the events of last night will have affected many people and caused concern, particularly as the incident happened so close to the scene of the terrorist attack on the 22nd of May 2017. I believe this makes it an even more dreadful attack for our city.
Hopkins praised the bravery of four police officers who subdued the suspect at Manchester's Victoria Station, adding, "The police investigation is continuing." This is International Edition on VOA. In 2018, sitting leaders relinquished power in South Africa and Ethiopia. Zimbabwe elected a new leader after 37 years of rule by former President Robert Mugabe. Peaceful power transitions were also seen in Liberia, Sierra Leone, and Mali. But while many find those trends encouraging, the opposite is also true in countries where some of the world's longest-serving leaders continue to hold power. VOA's Mariama Diallo reports on the overall trends that are sparking both hope and worry.
Ethiopia saw unprecedented political change in 2018, says Ruben Brigidi, former U.S. ambassador to the African Union.
The historic decision of former Prime Minister Haile Mariam Desalegn to voluntarily relinquish power is something that's never happened in Ethiopian history before. It paved the way for the entree of the current Prime Minister, Dr. Abiy Ahmed, who has made a series of incredible political reforms, the release of political prisoners, to leading the effort to appoint the first female president in Ethiopia's history.
The second most populous country in Africa also made peace with its neighbor, Eritrea, after 20 years of hostility. But nearly 1 million people have been displaced in southern Ethiopia since clashes erupted there in April, according to UN agencies. In Zimbabwe, the forced resignation of President Robert Mugabe in late 2017 paved the way for elections this year. Ken Opalo, assistant professor of African politics at Georgetown University.
It wasn't democratic, but it was a transition. And I think any transition is better than no transition, especially if it's done constitutionally, which, ZANU-PF jumped through a lot of hoops to make it look like it was a democratic transition.
The elections were won by President Emmerson Mnangagwa, a longtime ally of Mugabe, making some wonder if this was a real transition from the old guard.
I think, as we're seeing in Mozambique and Angola, any transition is good because the new set of rulers typically want to, you know, be their own men and women. And so they'll implement reforms like you're seeing in Angola that may not always go well with the previous regime.
As the year draws to an end, attention turns to the Democratic Republic of Congo, which will hold elections on December 23rd. Michael O'Hanlon of the Brookings Institution in Washington.
If those go passably well, I think this is a huge boost forward because that will be combined, as I see it, with, you know, not so bad trends in Nigeria, Kenya, Tanzania.
While trends for democracy are encouraging, countries like Congo-Brazzaville, Equatorial Guinea, Cameroon, Sudan, and Uganda are home to some of the longest-serving presidents in Africa. In the case of Equatorial Guinea's president, Theodoro Obiang-Nguema Mbasogo, 2019 will mark his 40th year in power. Mariama Diallo, VOA News, Washington.
From the African continent, we move now to Southeast Asia. Thailand, known for its tough anti-drug trafficking efforts, made history this month as Southeast Asia's first country to legalize medical marijuana. Steve Sanford reports on traditions and new developments in the kingdom.
Here in northern Thailand, the cultivation of special herbs for personal use is something of a tradition. Thai marijuana buds were in huge demand, with illegal exports heading to North America since the 1970s. But cannabis as a treatment for pain and depression has long been practiced and is a popular herb for consumers like Ong, who prefer just using his first name.
My relative, who wants to use marijuana as a medicine, calls me because traditional Thai doctors who want to use cannabis don't know where to find it because they don't smoke it. So I help them to find it to make useful medicines.
The government pharmaceutical organization is already working on strain selection, breed improvement, cultivation, and harvesting. As the new year rolls in, the Homegrown Institute will be tackling some major diseases using extracts from the plant.
In the first year, we want to make a clinical research for condition so that seizure in childhood, epilepsy, and intractable pain, and multiple sclerosis, and the side effect from anti-cancer chemotherapy.
While optimism is still at a high, some experts are concerned about future problems arising from competing economic interests.
Whenever profit from distributing substance to the public is outweighed the harm from the substance, then it's very difficult to control the negative impact. Alcohol would be a good example. If we not concerned about this and allow cannabis to be commercialized to serve the profit for private enterprise, I think we are going to end up similar condition as alcohol problem around the world.
With global profits projected to reach more than $20 billion by 2022, a cloud of uncertainty remains on Thailand's bid to enter the race. Steve Sanford for VOA News in Chiang Mai, Thailand.
From Washington, this is VOA's International Edition.
The lyrics could be French,
English,
Portuguese,
Bantu,
Arabic, etc.
It is the beat,
the African beat that counts.
The beat does all the translations.
It cuts across all languages and gives us the understanding that this is the African beat.
It is so distinct
and adhesive.
It binds us together.
African beat on The Voice of America, Mondays through Fridays, 0900 and 2000 Universal Time.
With David Bandy.
Take your pick, watch on television, log on to the internet, or listen right here on the radio. Hello, I am Shaka Sali, the host of Straight Talk Africa from The Voice of America. Each Wednesday night, I'll put you in touch with newsmakers and experts as they, you and I, talk about the most important social and political issues in Africa. Shaka Sali saying, I'll be waiting for your call Wednesday night on Straight Talk Africa from The Voice of America.
This is VOA's International Edition. Still to come, we'll look at a growing trend in Hollywood. Well, like athletes who become injured while playing sports, many musicians suffer occupational pain, repetitive strain, and overuse injuries. But unlike sports injuries, there is a stigma attached to being hurt while playing music. That's why the Peabody Institute of the Johns Hopkins University founded the Johns Hopkins Center for Music and Medicine. As VOA's Faith Lapidus tells us, the center uses a holistic wellness model to better care for the performers.
Chelsea Strayer, a freshman at Peabody Conservatory, plays double bass.
I try to get in about like 3 hours a day of practicing, plus on top of, you know, having other rehearsals for a few hours normally every day.
The long hours and intensity of the repetitive movement caused her pain.
I've had pain in my arm before here, but it's never been in my wrist area before. And I've gotten bruising quite a few times now in the same place in my hand. But telling my teacher, like, okay, I'm getting pain in my wrist, like, I can't play, like, this is starting to hurt a lot. And him being like, so concerned, he was like, okay, well, you need to go and get this checked out.
Strayer went to the Center for Music and Medicine Clinic located on campus. She met with co-founder Sarup Bashtepa Gray, who referred her to the clinic for tissue therapy.
The tissue therapy, basically, it is a stretching, strengthening, soft tissue massage, and some physical agent modalities like cold, heat, and all that good stuff. What that does is that helps promote tissue healing.
She says musicians' injuries are more common than most people realize. They range from tendonitis to sprains.
4 out of 5 musicians who play an instrument will get injured during their career at least once. Out of these 4, 1 will recover and get back merrily to playing their instrument. Out of the remaining 3, 2 will continue playing but will have chronic problems with acute episodes along the way. And unfortunately, 1 will discontinue their art because of injury.
Bashtepa Gray, a medical doctor who plays the guitar, is familiar with both the joy and pain of playing an instrument. She says some instruments cause more pain than others.
Harp, piano, guitar are among the top. Also high strings, violin, viola. They are the most injurious. The least injurious instruments are brass for the arms.
Having a clinic on campus, says Associate Dean Sarah Hoover, sends a message to their students and fellow musicians.
There's a culture of shame and stigma associated with being injured as a musician. So the establishment of our clinic here at Peabody, the establishment of the Center for Music and Medicine, and the establishment of a whole bunch of new educational programs has really been to address this need. And it's a need for public awareness, for specialized health care, and it's a need to create a model where we integrate training and teaching with medical care so that we get a full circle of care.
To create this full circle, Hoover and her team have developed an online program that will soon become a valuable resource to help injured musicians beyond the Peabody Conservatory. More attention is also given to the orientation process of rehabilitation, so the treated musicians aren't injured again when they go back to work.
So in order to be able to do that, one of the ideas is to create an instrument specialist position to work within the clinic and the interdisciplinary team with the doctors, the therapists, so that they can help the injured musician, especially in gradually getting back to play.
On the prevention side, Johns Hopkins biomedical engineers and neurologists are now working to develop a new smart guitar that will measure how much pressure a guitarist is placing on his or her arm and fingers while playing.
This, I'm hoping, will inform us both in creating preventive programming so that musicians don't injure, but also I think it would be valuable in training musicians so that they can develop certain motor skills more quickly without a lot of repetition.
Bashtepa Gray says this approach can help the performers enjoy what they like most, playing music, without suffering injuries. For writer Faiza El-Masri in Baltimore, Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
Thank you.
From the concert hall to the movie theater, 2018 was a year of box office successes and awards for black films. Marvel's action flick Black Panther introduced the first black superhero lead actor and grossed over $1 billion worldwide. Other films with black leading characters also did well with audiences and critics. VOA's Penelope Pulu has more.
Ryan Coogler's Black Panther, about a fictional African king with superhero powers and his technologically advanced country, Wakanda, has received dozens of awards and been recognized as one of the year's 10 best movies for its social and artistic significance, celebrating African and African-American cultures. Producer Nate Moore spoke to VOA about the film's power.
African-American audiences, there's a lot to pull from. And hopefully there's some inspiration, again, about learning about the roots of where African-Americans came from.
Black Panther is also the third highest grossing film ever in the United States and an Oscar contender. But will its success open Hollywood's doors for other black films? Too soon to tell, says media expert Richard Craig.
I think Hollywood processes that the way Hollywood processes most things, and that's looking at the bottom line, the profit margin.
But Craig believes it will be a while before high-budget film franchises such as James Bond or Spider-Man are produced with black actors as leads. He says the only black Spider-Man on film is the animated Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse.
We're given this cartoon version of Spider-Man to accept this black face as Spider-Man, as opposed to having a real-time, real-place actor.
However, Craig says, black movies with political or cultural messages and star actors and filmmakers attached to them have a good chance being funded by Hollywood.
Since you asked, I hate blacks.
Two such films this year are Spike Lee's Black Klansman, a dark satire based on a true story about an African-American cop infiltrating the Ku Klux Klan.
You ready for this?
And If Beale Street Could Talk, a romantic drama about social injustice and incarceration of African-American men in 1970s America by Oscar-winning filmmaker Barry Jenkins. Both films are expected to be Oscar contenders.
Let me give you a tip. You want to make some money here? Use your white voice.
My white voice?
I'm not talking about Will Smith's wife, like this young blood.
Hey, Mr. Kramer, this is Langston from Regal View.
But smaller black films by lesser-known filmmakers also showed that they can make their mark in theaters if their message speaks to the audience. Sorry to Bother You by Boots Riley advocates activism against the economic exploitation of corporate America. Not around,
out of the car.
George Stillman's drama, The Hate U Give, about a police shooting of an African-American teen in a black community, also went viral. Stillman said that was because the film offered an authentic depiction of African-Americans killed by police, and its message resonated with audiences all over the country.
It's about black people, poor people, everybody at the bottom.
Penelope Pulu, VOA News, Washington.
Well, let's hope this box office trend continues into 2019. And I have to say, I loved Black Panther. It is one of the best superhero movies ever. Can't wait for the next installment. Well, you've been listening to International Edition. You can find us at voanews.com or on the VOA mobile app. Thanks for joining us. And thanks to our director, Dan Brown, our engineer, Thomas Blondet. And I'm Jim Bertel in Washington. Happy New Year.